page 109. Starting chapter 16. Scenes at the plantation. Early the next morning, I left my grandmother's with my youngest child. My boy was ill, and I left him behind. I had many sad thoughts as the old wagon jolted on. Hitherto, I had suffered alone. Now my little one was to be treated as a slave. As we drew near the great house, I thought of the time when I was formerly sent there out of revenge. I wondered for what purpose I was now sent. I could not tell. I resolved to obey orders so far as duty required, but within myself I was determined to make my stay as short as possible. Mr. Flint was waiting to receive us, and told me to follow him upstairs to receive orders for the day. My little Ellen was left below in the kitchen. It was a change for her, who had always been so carefully tended. My young master said she might amuse herself in the yard. This was kind of him, since the child was hateful to his sight. My task was to fit up the house for the reception of the bride. In the midst of sheets, tablecloths, towels, drapery, and carpeting, my head was as busy planning as were my fingers with the needle. At noon, I was allowed to go to Ellen. She had sobbed herself to sleep. I heard Mr. Flint say to a neighbor, "I've got her down here, and I'll soon take the town notions out of her head." My father is partly to blame for her nonsense. He ought to have broke her in long ago. The remark was made within my hearing, and it would have been quite as manly to have said it to my face. He had said things to my face which might or might not have surprised his neighbor if he had known of them. He was a chip of the old block. I resolved to give him no cause to accuse me of being too much of a lady so far as work was concerned. I worked day and night with wretchedness before me. Page 110. When I lay down beside my child, I felt how much easier it would be to see her die than to see her master beat her about, as I daily saw him beat other little ones. The spirit of the mothers was so crushed by the lash that they stood by without courage to remonstrate. How much more first I suffer before I should be broke in to that degree. I wished to appear as contented as possible. Sometimes I had an opportunity to send a few lines home, and this brought up recollections that made it difficult for a time to seem calm and indifferent to my lot. Notwithstanding my efforts, I saw that Mr. Flint regarded me with a suspicious eye. Ellen broke down under the trials of her new life. Separated from me, with no one to look after her, she wandered about, and in a few days cried herself sick. One day she sat under the window where I was at work, crying that weary cry which makes a mother's heart bleed. I was obliged to steel myself to bear it. After a while it ceased. I looked out, and she was gone. As it was near noon, I ventured to go down in search of her. The great house was raised 2 feet above the ground. I looked under it and saw her about midway, fast asleep. I crept under and drew her out. As I held her in my arms, I thought how well it would be for her if she never waked up, and I uttered my thought aloud. I was startled to hear someone say, "Did you speak to me?" I looked up and saw Mr. Flint standing beside me. He said nothing further, but turned, frowning, away. That night he sent Ellen a biscuit and a cup of sweetened milk. This generosity surprised me. I learned afterwards that in the afternoon he had killed a large snake which crept from under the house, and I suppose that incident had prompted his unusual kindness. The next morning the old cart was loaded with shingles for town. I put Ellen into it and sent her to her grandmother. Mr. Flint said I ought to have asked his permission. I told him the child was sick and required attention which I had no time to give. He let it pass, for he was aware that I had accomplished much work in a little time. I had been 3 weeks on the plantation when I planned a visit home. It must be at night after everybody was in bed. Page 111. I was 6 miles from town, and the road was very dreary. I was to go with a young man who I knew often stole to town to see his mother. One night, when all was quiet, we started. Fear gave speed to our steps, and we were not long in performing the journey. I arrived at my grandmother's. Her bedroom was on the first floor, and the window was open, the weather being warm. I spoke to her, and she awoke. She let me in and closed the window, lest some late passerby should see me. A light was brought, and the whole household gathered around me, some smiling and some crying. I went to look at my children and thanked God for their happy sleep. The tears fell as I leaned over them. As I moved to leave, Benny stirred. I turned back and whispered, "Mother is here." After digging at his eyes with his little fist, they opened, and he sat up in bed, looking at me curiously. Having satisfied himself that it was I, he exclaimed, "Oh, Mother, you ain't dead, are you? They didn't cut off your head at the plantation, did they?" My time was up too soon, and my guide was waiting for me. I laid Benny back in his bed and dried his tears by a promise to come again soon. Rapidly we retraced our steps back to the plantation. About halfway we were met by a company of 4 patrols. Luckily we heard their horse hooves before they came in sight, and we had time to hide behind a large tree. They passed, hallooing and shouting in a manner that indicated a recent carousal. How thankful we were that they had not their dogs with them. We hastened our footsteps, and when we arrived on the plantation, we heard the sound of the hand mill. The slaves were grinding their corn. We were safely in the house before the horn summoned them to their labor. I divided my little parcel of food with my guide, knowing that he had lost the chance of grinding his corn and must toil all day in the field. Mr. Flint often took an inspection of the house to see that no one was idle. The entire management of the work was trusted to me because he knew nothing about it, and rather than hire a superintendent, he contented himself with my arrangements. He had often urged upon his father the necessity of having me at the plantation to take charge of his affairs and make clothes for the slaves, but the old man knew him too well to consent to that arrangement. Page 112. When I had been working a month at the plantation, the great aunt of Mr. Flint came to make him a visit. This was the good old lady who paid $50 for my grandmother for the purpose of making her free when she stood on the auction block. My grandmother loved this old lady, whom we all called Miss Fanny. She often came to take tea with us. On such occasions, the table was spread with a snow-white cloth, and the china cups and silver spoons were taken from the old-fashioned buffet. There were hot muffins, tea rusks, and delicious sweetmeats. My grandmother kept 2 cows, and the fresh cream was Miss Fanny's delight. She invariably declared that it was the best in town. The old ladies had cozy times together. They would work and chat, and sometimes, while talking over old times, their spectacles would get dim with tears and would have to be taken off and wiped. When Miss Fanny bade us goodbye, her bag was filled with grandmother's best cakes, and she was urged to come again soon. There had been a time when Dr. Flint's wife came to make tea with us, and when her children were also sent to have a feast of Aunt Marthy's nice cooking. But after I became an object of her jealousy and spite, she was angry with Grandmother for giving a shelter to me and my children. She would not even speak to her in the street. This wounded my grandmother's feelings, for she could not retain ill will against the woman whom she had nourished with her milk when a babe. The doctor's wife would have gladly prevented our intercourse with Miss Fanny if she could have done it. But fortunately she was not dependent on the bounty of the Flints. She had enough to be independent, and that is more than can ever be gained from charity, however lavish it may be. Miss Fanny was endeared to me by many recollections, and I was rejoiced to see her at the plantation. The warmth of her large, loyal heart made the house seem pleasanter while she was in it. She stayed a week, and I had many talks with her. She said her principal object in coming was to see how I was treated and whether anything could be done for me. Page 113. She inquired whether she could help me in any way. I told her I believed not. She condoled me with her own peculiar way, saying she wished that I and all my grandmother's family were at rest in our graves, for not until then should she feel any peace about us. The good old soul did not dream that I was planning to bestow peace upon her with regard to myself and my children, not by death, but by securing our freedom. Again and again I had traversed those dreary 12 miles to and from the town, and all the way I was meditating upon some means of escape for myself and my children. My friends had made every effort that ingenuity could devise to effect our purchase, but all their plans had proved abortive. Dr. Flint was suspicious and determined not to loosen his grasp upon us. I could have made my escape alone, but it was more for my helpless children than for myself that I longed for freedom. Though the boon would have been precious to me above all price, I would not have taken it at the expense of leaving them in slavery. Every trial I endured, every sacrifice I made for their sakes, drew them closer to my heart and gave me fresh courage to beat back the dark waves that rolled and rolled over me in a seemingly endless wave of storms. The 6 weeks were nearly completed when Mr. Flint's bride was expected to take possession of her new home. The arrangements were all completed, and Mr. Flint said I had done well. He expected to leave home on Saturday and return with his bride the following Wednesday. After receiving various orders from him, I ventured to ask permission to spend Sunday in town. It was granted, for which favor I was thankful. It was the first I had ever asked of him, and I intended it should be the last. It needed more than one night to accomplish the project I had in view, but the whole of Sunday would give me an opportunity. I spent the Sabbath with my grandmother. A calmer, more beautiful day never came down out of heaven. To me it was a day of conflicting emotions. Perhaps it was the last day I should ever spend under that dear old sheltering roof. Perhaps these were the last talks I would ever have with the faithful old friend of my whole life. Page 114. Perhaps it was the last time I and my children should be together. Well, better so, I thought, than that they should be slaves. I knew the doom that awaited my fair baby in slavery, and I determined to save her from it or perish in the attempt. I went to make this vow at the graves of my poor parents in the burying ground of the slaves, where the wickedest cease from troubling, and there the weary be at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. The servant is free from his master. I knelt by the graves of my parents and thanked God, as I had often done before, that they had not lived to witness my trials or to mourn over my sins. I had received my mother's blessing when she died, and in many an hour of tribulation I had seemed to hear her voice sometimes chiding me, sometimes whispering loving words into my wounded heart. I have shed many and bitter tears to think that when I am gone from my children, they cannot remember me with such entire satisfaction as I remembered my mother. The graveyard was in the woods, and twilight was coming on. Nothing broke the death-like stillness except the occasional twitter of a bird. My spirit was overawed by the solemnity of the scene. For more than 10 years I had frequented this spot, but it had never seemed so sacred as now. A black stump at the head of my mother's grave was all that remained of a tree my father had planted. His grave was marked by a small wooden board bearing his name, the letters of which were nearly obliterated. I knelt down and kissed them and poured forth a prayer to God for guidance and support in the perilous step I was about to take. As I passed the wreck of the old meeting house where, before Nat Turner's time, the slaves had been allowed to meet for worship, I seemed to hear my father's voice come from it, bidding me not to tarry till I reached my freedom or the grave. I rushed on with renovated hopes. My trust in God had been strengthened by that prayer among the graves. My plan was to conceal myself at the house of a friend and remain there a few weeks till the search was over. My hope was that the doctor would get discouraged and, for fear of losing my value, and also of subsequently finding my children among the missing, he would consent to sell us, and I knew somebody would buy us. Page 115.